Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Crime and Investigations, I Am a Killer is a brand new 10-part true crime documentary series produced in partnership with Netflix by an excellent production team including me, Danny Tipping,
and me, Tom Adams. Each episode tells the story of a prisoner convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
In this podcast, we'll be going into the making of each episode, revealing what it was like to produce this incredible series.
My name is Kenneth Foster Jr. I'll be 41 years old next month. I was convicted for capital murder, and I was sentenced to death in 1997.
So, episode one of I Am a Killer is called Killer in the Eyes of the Law, and it features Kenneth Foster. Kenneth wrote to us a number of times, and his story, well, not unique, but certainly different in this series. And he was convicted under the law of parties, which is a law in America that allows you to be tried for murder if you are in fact an accomplice to the murder. In this case, Kenneth was the driver of the car where his friend did in fact murder someone. Kenneth was the driver, didn't commit the crime himself, but was convicted as if he had and was sentenced to death. Ultimately, his death sentence was commuted just a few hours, 6 hours, I think, Tom, before he received his death sentence. And Kenneth's been in prison ever since. And it was unusual because we hadn't come across the law of parties before. So it stood out that this character had spent his entire adult life in prison for being an accomplice to murder, but without actually committing the murder itself. So it did raise lots and lots of questions. And Kenneth is currently, although he's going through various appeal processes.
The viewings we had of this, actually, I mean, the same was true across the board, actually, but I think this one especially, when this was shown to people, when we were first getting the cuts out and trying to shape the story, I think people were quite amazed at him being on death row for what he did. But maybe that's a British perspective. Maybe they see it very, very differently. I mean, obviously, they all don't, because there are campaigns to there were you know, big campaigns to get him off death row, which ultimately succeeded.
Well, and ongoing campaigns against the law of parties, which is seen across the board as a very complicated and sometimes unfair law or interpretation of the law.
Mauricio Brown testified that we didn't plan a robbery. He testified that nobody encouraged him to rob. And he testified that he acted on his own accord. Unfortunately, that wasn't good enough. You know, the jury didn't believe it, you know, and they convicted both of us of capital murder. They convicted me of being a conspirator to the crime. They convicted me mostly for being a driver, for driving the car. And they handed down a death sentence for that.
I think the best documentaries are not about the questions you answer, but the questions you ask. And in this one, we've allowed or had very fortunate to have the cooperation and the opportunity to interview people on both sides of the fence who talk very openly, very passionately about how they feel And Kenneth is obviously central to that, who I think is very open and very honest. And we interviewed Kenneth twice, as we did all the contributors. And he it's the first time he has had the opportunity to speak as openly and as freely about his crime and the punishment he received. And it does leave you, you know, really, really, if not questioning what you thought to be true, but certainly really having to think deeply about the law and realizing that there's many, many layers to every story. Again, you know, had we approached this as we might normally in a true crime documentary series without Kenneth's contribution, this may not have made it onto our list until you talk to the key protagonist, Kenneth, and the victim's family and Kenneth's own family and those people involved in the case. And it starts a much more complicated and nuanced story starts to unravel. I think that's true across the series, but Kenneth's one is certainly one that provoked a really big spectrum of emotions and thoughts and feelings. And
yeah, I suppose it all boils down to how involved he was, and that is for the courts to decide. We all have our opinions.
Every day for the last 21 years, I've had the think, what can I do that's going to make a difference in this situation? Because it's hard to bring a triumph from a tragedy like this, because this man shouldn't have lost his life. Even though I wasn't the one that killed him, nevertheless, I was there, and I've had to pay the price for it, and it means something to me.
So our teams interviewed both Kenneth Foster's grandfather, who was responsible for a large part of Kenneth's upbringing, and Mark LaHood's brother, Nico LaHood. And in the film, we reveal that Nico went on to become a district attorney. So he's, you know, intimately involved in maintaining the laws in Texas, and feels very, very strongly that Kenneth has received the punishment he deserves. And at that point, I think that the team, you know, saw an opportunity to perhaps bring the two parties together. And so we did instigate the meeting between...
There was a hope at one point that Nico would go and visit Kenneth in prison. It was certainly talked about and it wasn't off the table, but it just trying to make things happen within the time frame it needed to happen in and have parties agree, it proved too challenging. But actually, I think the programme is stronger for it, actually, because it just leaves that hanging. Mm.
But the meeting between Kenneth's grandfather and Nico LaHood is an extremely powerful piece of television of and in itself. And it's, I mean, they are very much at odds, but they treat each other with a great deal of respect.
Yeah, yeah.
I think both very much understand each other's feelings on the matter, which, as I say, couldn't be more
polar opposites,
at odds, yeah. And effectively agree to disagree. But I mean, I don't think Kenneth's grandfather got the resolution he was hoping for. But it really is, again, it's just another opportunity to examine the many layers and opposing views that each of these cases offers up. But it was a rare thing. When we suggested, we didn't know if the parties would agree, and we're extremely grateful that they did, because I think it gives the viewer just an incredible amount of insight into what these people, you know, whilst Kenneth is obviously affected by the decisions that were made in court, you know, even more so are the families of those people that lost their lives. And, you know, it's an opportunity to see them discuss it.
The idea of meeting with Kenneth Foster doesn't enrage me anymore. It used to. I will not expend any resources to do something solely for him. He can't pay me back. There's nothing he can do to pay me back. So why even seek out a debt that he can't pay?
Nico is such a good interviewee as well. I mean, he he's a public speaker for a living, but so eloquent, and the way he related his feelings back to the church, which he's very involved with, and actually, you know, found God since his brother was murdered, and I mean, he talks about it in the film about a way of getting rid of his anger. His anger, what does he say? He would sit on his drive, challenging the devil to come back. I mean, extraordinary lines, really, from an interview. So, you know, great that he was so willing to be involved and engaged with the whole programme.
And again, he's he's very charismatic and intelligent guy, but extremely honest in his... He doesn't pull any punches. He is convinced that Kenneth Foster's received the... Initially, receiving the death sentence, received the punishment that he deserves, and he's unwavering in that belief, and challenges the viewer to see it from his point of view. Tell me, sitting at home, that you don't believe in the death penalty, as I'm sure many of our viewers probably don't. But tell me that again when you've seen your own brother lying dead in your driveway, and wherever you stand, I think on the subject, that's incredibly powerful. You know, it's a challenge for you to consider somebody else's point of view. And I think it's, it's very, very bold and honest and brave of Nico to put that out there. Mm. I mean, he's got a couple of things going on. He's a very interesting character.
Yeah, his granddad was a great character.
Again, but there's, you know, just in accepting the fact that his grandson, he's going to spend the best part of his, in best case scenario, will spend the majority of his life behind bars, and there's nothing he can do about it. Yeah. You know, his grandfather's accepted that he will be dead a long time before Kenneth is released, if that ever happens. And, you know, that there couldn't be a more, you know, telling sign of what we're dealing with, that you know, Kenneth's family will be gone before he gets to see them again.
Now the thing is, get him out of there. Death, I mean, a life sentence is a life sentence, and I still have work to do. I mean, I'm 90 years old now, but I still say I'm going to see him free.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even though Kenneth wasn't on death row, it was the same setup, actually, whether you were on death row or not. He was still...
He was still in maximum security on life sentence.
Still behind glass. He was still, we still didn't have that contact with him. So there was nothing simpler about it. I didn't want a format for this series. Formats force you to fit a story to a shape. And I was adamant that we should take each story on its merits and tell it the way it needed to be told. Actually, through discussions within the team and through actually necessity, we ended up with what turned out to be a loose format, but it worked for us, and it gave us flexibility to tell stories individually, but give the series a shape. And that was... We've talked about only being allowed an hour. And actually, I think it was Kathy whose suggestion was we shoot them twice, come what may, in case we can't get enough from that first interview.
Kathy Hale's our head of production, who was on the Cross the Series right from the very beginning, from our earliest development, from the first letter we sent until the last tape was delivered. And originally, it was almost for safety purposes, wasn't it, that we ensured But it turned out to be much, much more than that as a device.
Well, it
allowed us to establish the other facts and set the scene in the first interview, collect information from all the other sources and contributors, and then go back and present some of those key interviews to our contributors and give them the opportunity to respond, which was, I mean, in some films more than others, but an incredibly powerful tool.
I mean, my feeling was if, and I don't know whether this is true or not, and it came to pass that it was in some instances and not in others. It's all dependent on the character. But I felt that the possibility was there that if you have been in prison for 20 years for committing a crime, and as Josh Nelson makes clear, for a moment, the worst thing he'd ever done, and you've done that, perhaps you regret it immediately, perhaps you don't regret it. It depends on circumstances. But whatever, you have committed that crime, you are in prison for 20 years. I felt that over that 20 years, perhaps you would have an internal dialogue that allowed you to make sense of what you did, that allowed you to come to terms. Maybe you had reasons for it and you've decided those reasons were valid, or maybe you felt it wasn't your fault, whatever it might be. But there's some kind of internal conversation that allows you to get up every morning on death row or in maximum security and just survive that day. And what that first interview would do would reveal that story, would hopefully give us that internal conversation that allowed you to do what you did every day. We would then go away and speak to other contributors, perhaps arresting officers or relatives of the victim or friends of the prisoner, whoever it might be. And then perhaps there would be a mismatch between stories. Perhaps what we heard from the prisoner didn't quite match up with what we heard from other contributors. And it might be that we could then go back and explore those differences. And that became a very broad brushstroke format that we explored. And at times it was a useful way of thinking about a story. At times it wasn't. But I think with Kenneth, it was interesting to speak to everyone else and get their perspective on what happened, and then come back and ask him about differences and you know, previous things that he had done in his life, etc. And that became a useful way of telling the stories across the series. A lot of these stories are just desperately sad. Mm. You know, it's again and again we would be watching these and just think, what a waste, what a absolute waste of Michael's life, of Kenneth's life. It's just,
well, and those that have been dealing with it ever since. It's affected
so
everybody.
Much, yeah.
And I think, and that's in common with the whole series. I don't think there's very few stories in this series that are as straightforward as they might appear on paper. And this is a very good example of that. And it's I think it took us all by surprise. In virtually every episode, I think I was taken by surprise by the levels of
the layers that
the layers of complexity and of emotion and how you might feel at the end of them. And this is definitely a good example of that.
We'd love to hear what you think of the series. Comment on Facebook or Twitter with hashtag IAmAKiller. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe to this podcast series.
The I Am A Killer podcast is hosted by Tom Adams and Danny Tipping and is produced by Sam Pearson, Steph Nardilli and Matt Talent, with editing by Susanna Lawrence.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.